Okay. Good afternoon. I'm going to talk about Siamese. So a number of people have contributed to this talk over the period of time, several years. So I want to thank them and also sponsors and the organizing committee for inviting me. So why do we study Siamese? Of course, we have interesting underlying physics. We are trying to figure out what's going on. But my task is to just show you a lot of nice pictures, try to understand Siamese from an observer's point of view. So Siamese are, of course, known to cause severe geomagnetic storms. They also cause long-lasting, large solar particle events, solar energetic particle events known as SEPs. And also, when the shocks driven by the Siamese arrive at 1AU, they come with a bag of solar energetic particles known as energetic storm particles. Of course, people have thought about mass ejections from the sun for a long time. Early observations of type 2 bursts, H-alpha observations, from that we know mass ejected from the sun, but not quite the way we are thinking right now. The concept of plasma ejection known to solar terrestrial researchers from 1919. And then CME, as we know today, were discovered in white light, pictures obtained by WOSO 7. And then after that, we have several spacecraft missions that produced a huge collection of CME data. Of course, I wanted to show you a 19th century CME from Eddy, from eclipse observations. And you can even see the three-part structure there. Of course, before all these IDL and CCDs and so. Okay, CME observations, of course, mainly done in white light because they are very spectacular, and then you can see up to 30 solar radii from Soho, Alaska. In white light, we see Thomson scattered photospheric light. You know, the photosphere is a million times brighter than the corona, so you have to block, so you have an occulting disk. And the Thomson scattering process samples mainly the mass, the electrons, free electrons. So it doesn't care what temperature the material is, so you see prominences and coronal loops moving out. Because of the occulting disk, of course, we have to use other wavelengths like H-alpha, X-ray, EUV, radio to understand what's going on near the surface. And also when the CMEs move out far into the interplanetary medium, either we have to use techniques like interplanetary scintillation or in-situ observations to observe them. The CME emission, mostly thermal emission. Of course, when they are associated with flares, you see non-thermal emission, and the non-thermal emission can help detect CMEs. For example, when the non-thermal particles get trapped into the CME substructures, those structures are basically shined by these non-thermal particles, so you can detect these CMEs. So what I will do is go through a number of different observations that give information about all these substructures of CMEs. Of course, CMEs are very common. This is nearly 4,000 CMEs were observed up to June 2001. And there is a soul cycle variation of the number of CMEs. And except for these three or four rotations, you can see a complete variation with the solar cycle. And all these CMEs have been measured, and their properties are listed in our catalog in this website.
From phase size of both?
Just phase size. But they might include a lot of backside because we do not distinguish between front side and backside halos. So it might include a lot of backside events also. Okay, how to define a CME? It is the corona before an ejection, during an ejection. So that it's easy to keep away if a mass ejection. And this is, it has a very nice diffuse frontal structure, and then your region of nothing, that's a void or cavity, and then you have a bright core. And here's another event coming this way. Here's the frontal structure. As it moves out, you see the void and then a bright core behind. As I said before, we have to use non-thermographic observations to see where the CMEs originate. So I've given, for example, a series of pictures from helium 10A30. Okay. So here's an active region, and there's a tiny filament here. The filaments are cool material. And then as time falls from 1754 towards the end of the day, you see the filament expanding and slowly moving towards the limb. Okay, so of course the observatory closed at the time, but we caught it in Japan with the Nobuyama radioheliograph. This is a microwave image embedded in a LASCO image. So here's the limb brightening of the microwave, and see the filament has just left the limb and gone outside, and it become a prominence. So you see it in emission. And then later on, you find it in the core of this nice CME. This is the CME which is just I showed before. And you can even see this double structure in the prominence. So you can track it. Basically, the core is nothing but a filament. In the meanwhile, something is happening on the disk in Yoko, soft X-ray images. And this is the same active region, the bright regions. And then you see something, slight brightening in X-rays, and it builds up and becomes a huge arcade. Okay, so this is basically the scar left behind by the CME. And then if you make some difference images, you can see what's going on around it. And this is the same arcade beginning to form. And you see around that you have a dark region, which we call dimming. That means material has left from that region. So typically this is what it happens in slower events. In fast events, it's not easy to track like this. And without differencing, this image shows there is a nice arcade formation. And you can even see dimming right here, even without differencing, right here, and maybe right here. So again, Yoko, that's a key image. Okay, so from this region, you expect a CME. That's what is shown here.
Your microphone
is hanging by your knee. Oh, I understand now why. We get a sound effect. Okay. Here is another event in EUV, Soho EIT, and here is an arcade. There was a filament sitting there which erupted, and it produced dimming on either side. Right here there was a dimming, and you can even see the CME moving part of it in EUV. See that? And that arcade could be seen in both X-rays, that's the contour, and also I have superposed the X-ray contours on the EUV 195 angstrom arcade. And some places you see it's dark in EUV, where it is very bright in X-rays, mainly because of the reason that it's very hot and it's outside the EUV passband. And that's the point I was making yesterday, that sometimes you don't see the loop because it's hot and you don't see it in X-rays. Okay, so let's summarize the structure of the CMEs. If the CME is fast enough, it can drive a shock. So that will be the first structure ahead of the CME. Then you have the frontal structure. The frontal structure has a high density compared to the ambient corona. It has probably coronal temperature and high magnetic field compared to the ambient. Okay? So the numbers, okay, the coronal density, frontal density may be 10 to the 8, temperature 2 million degrees, and magnetic field may be about a Gauss. Okay. And this can be observed in white light, X-rays, meter waves. I'll come to that. Then the cavity. The cavity is least known. In X-ray images, you see coronal cavity. All right, but what is it? Some people say it's flux rope. So we have very little information about that, but density is probably less, 10 to the 7. Maybe coronal temperature, maybe more magnetic field in there, because you want to have a higher magnetic pressure for the cavity to hold the overlying frontal structure. Then you have the prominence core, which is the brightest in white light because it has highest density. You know, the density can go up to 10 to the 11. And then the temperature is lowest, it's about 8 to 10,000 degrees. And then you have magnetic field is, 10 Gauss. Is Halzer in here? Okay. So you can see that the entire CME is a multi-thermal structure starting from 8,000 degrees to several million degrees. Okay. So because of this multi-thermal character, you have to use various combination of wavelengths to observe them. Then finally, of course, this post-eruption arcade, which the temperature can be very high in the case of active region flares. So the arcades I show you are generally from filament eruption, so you see lower temperature. But in the case of active region, all this loop will be smashed together, and then you see only very localized loop structures, which could be very bright and hot. And this is likely, parameters. I want to caution you that not all substructures are present in all CMEs. And also, it is well known from eclipse observations that this three-part structure, the frontal structure, cavity, and core, is oftentimes seen in eclipse pictures. And now, of course, you can see with the X-ray and EUV data also. And here is an example to show that, you don't see the three-part structure. It's a nice CME coming out with a void, nothing inside. And it was a very slowly moving void of 250 kilometers per second. And the void itself is expanding with this rate. Okay, to summarize CME properties. Typical mass is about 10 to the 15 grams. Speed, less than 20 kilometers per second to more than 2,000 kilometers per second. We have observed up to 2,800 kilometers per second during this solar cycle so far. So it looks like that maybe at the most CMEs can have a speed of about 3,000 kilometers per second. CMEs are observed to have acceleration, deceleration, and constant speed within the coronal graph field of view. Typical kinetic energy, you can just calculate from that, is about 10 to the 25 joules. Temperature, as I mentioned, is 8,000 to a couple of million degrees. Typical width is about 70 degrees. I showed you solar cycle variation. They appear one every other day during solar minimum and several per day during solar maximum. And they're related to solar flares, shocks, radio bursts, and solar energetic particles. Here is typical time profiles, high time profiles we observe in CMEs. Here we have shown three different time profiles for three different CMEs. One clearly shows acceleration. One seems to be constant speed, and one is decelerating. This behavior is produced, of course, by all the combination of retarding and propelling forces. So whatever J cross B pushes the CME out, gravity tries to oppose, and also the coronal drag opposes. The behavior of the acceleration seems to be that the coronal drag is very important near the surface. So, for example, this one is definitely propelling force must be dominant because it continues to accelerate at a rate more than the typical solar wind. And here is a constant speed. And then you have already start decelerating. And very fast ones tend to decelerate. And that's consistent with the drag. Where do CMEs originate? It's a dumb question, but then actually they originate from closed field regions, wherever they are. So either active regions or filaments or complexes. Okay? So definitely they do not originate from coronal holes. A few years ago there was a controversy going on, Siamese originated from cohorts and stuff like that, it's gone. All right. Although I should point out that filaments near kernel holes tend to erupt more frequently. So there may be some connection between the open field lines and closed field lines. This was noticed in Skylab period, and Yoko eruptions also were found to have this property. And here are some of the regions I was talking about. You have an active region in H-alpha and in UV. And it's a kernel hole, and this nice filament sitting here erupted, and you can see the eruption going on here. And the trans-equatorial loops also erupt and become CMEs. And then, of course, there are huge filaments, filament regions produce accelerating CMEs. Okay, a little bit of connection to flares. Here's an active region. And here's a trans-equatorial region. And we tracked this region, intensity in this region, and here we found this kind of behavior. In the active region, nothing happened, and then suddenly there was a flare. And in this region, much before the flare, you had a very weak dimming and then a sudden dimming, and then occurs the flare. Okay, so it looks as if this dimming essentially maps to the CME which came about later on. And then at this time, you see there is nothing happening in the active region. So the CME is far away already when the flare took place here. So I want to point out that the same region, when it rotated this side, there were some other CMEs which could be interpreted similarly, but our friends Kahn and Hudson think that the flare produces some shock waves which destabilize the interconnecting loops and produce CMEs. So I don't know whether they are convinced now or not. Still convinced? Okay. And then I want to point out there's an interesting work recently done by Ji Zhang, where he found that the CME definitely starts before the flare, but then at the time of the impulsive phase, you get an additional kick to the CME. So this has to be investigated further. He has done only 3 or 4 events. And H-alpha, of course, is the best way to see what's going on the surface. And here is a fat filament and disappeared and produced these 2 ribbons. And you can see that in EUV. This is the same filament here, sitting here. And this is the overlying, I mean, so you expect overlying loops here. And then when the filament erupts, you can see changes here, and then arcade forms perpendicular to the neutral line. You can see that in the movie. Okay. So, there you go. And if you look at in Lascaux, of course, the same CME can be seen there. Okay, so you see that bright structure there. So this bright structure is basically the filament that's erupted. Yeah, I think Bernie Jackson has done some comparison. He thinks that maybe the mass will go up by an order of magnitude because there's continued flow behind. Yeah. Okay, so another interesting CMEs are these halo CMEs. They're halo because they headed towards us, are anti-earthward direction. So they appear to surround the occulting disk, so we call them halo CMEs. They're discovered by Russ Howard. We do not know the width of these halo CMEs because, you know, you can have a narrow cone expanding quite a bit and then you see it, or you have a wide cone, you can see it. We do not know what's the real width of these CMEs. But they're very interesting because they can be geo-effective because they come and hit the geospace. Here's the 2 examples. This is an earthward-directed CME. that's going behind anti-earthward CME. And we say that only because there's nothing on the disk. You can see a difference image, it shows nothing. So the one interesting thing would be to find out what will be the width of these CMEs. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about the new tools that are available to us. The coronal dimming I already talked about, arcade formation. Yoko contributed a lot to this one. And then EIT waves, disturbances observed in EUV images. Thompson, Barbara Thompson discovered these. And then we have a special kind of EIT waves known as brow waves, which look like eyebrows from the eye is the active region, and then you see a nice structure there. And those are definitely shocks, looks like at least, because they're associated with type 2 bursts. And there are a couple of examples from Nansei where you can place the type 2 bursts right on the brow. And then a global enhancement, this is a kind of murky thing because some people think this is all scattering. But I think maybe they do produce some interesting signatures in the large-scale corona when a mass ejection comes out. Here's an example, overused example of EIT wave. And you know, this is the active region, and then wave comes out around that. This is a very excellent way of identifying the disk solar source of CMEs because LASCO and the EIT, they work together, so it's very easy to identify the solar sources using EIT data. Actually, every single one of them, if they occur close to the limb, are associated with CMEs. So the active region CMEs are the most you can say that. But the previous example I showed, there's no big flare. I mean, there's a very small sub-flare or weak Gauss X-rays. So the brow type seem to be, you know, in compact active region when there's a flare, yes. But then there's also CME. So I don't know if we can really see this. I have to stop this at the appropriate moment. Well, I give up. Right then, the first dimming you see is due to the brow type wave. Basically, you see it something like that, and you see it only one frame, and they seem to correspond very well with H alpha Morton waves, those brow type EIT waves. In Nobuyama, some of these events could be seen in Nobuyama also because Morton wave is a chromospheric signature, and microwaves observe the chromosphere also. So you can get that signature in microwaves. One thing we should remember that these EIT waves are not observed very clearly after 98, 99. So they appear very nicely when there's nothing else on the sun, only one active region. You see it very well. It's like a pond with a lot of grass. You drop something, you don't see the wave. Now here's a H alpha Morton wave from old observation. I think this is from Nakajima et al. I don't know which observatory is this, but this H alpha observation, this is the region, and then you see this Morton wave going out. But generally, H alpha Morton waves are very fast. And EIT waves you can see from 200 to higher than 200, typically 400.
They go one direction?
Yes, I mean, the brow type waves, yes. They go generally towards the equator or depends, I don't know, it most likely depends upon the density in the surrounding region, I guess. Wherever the, my feeling is if the density is high, it's good for shock formation. Because when the density goes up, the alpha speed goes down. And here's the global enhancement I was talking about. We noticed this first in Yoko images. This is the region of eruption saturated to show the other structures. And then when we did flux calculation in these regions, they are all simultaneous. Looks like there's some kind of large-scale eruption seen in X-rays. And we see that in EUV also, this whole region. But I mean, this is not real, okay, saturation. But the whole thing is not scattering. Some people think that. So it's worth exploring this possibility. But you also see this like Brow type wave only in one or two frames. Okay, and then so many things happen, you don't see this. And it's really huge compared to the active region size.
Why do you claim it's not scattering?
It's not scattering?
Why do you say that?
Well, for example, this structure is beautifully associated with Nansei radio images. You see all around here. And this for this one, Nariaki Nitta did a lot of calculations to show, he's a co-author on this paper, to show that it is not due to scattering.
Generally for SXT, if it were scattering, it would be quite symmetrical.
Right. Yes, I mean, you can see some structures, which is... Okay, so I think this is something to be explored further, anyways. All right, in microwaves, Nobuyama radio heliograph really contributed enormously to understand CMEs. Although it was a flare instrument, they built it to study flares. But then we saw so many interesting things, starting with the Hanaoka paper, where he saw a huge filament eruption in microwaves. That happens because in microwaves, the filament or the prominence is optically thick. So you get the surface temperature of 8,000 to 10,000 degrees. The disk itself in microwaves is about 10,000 degrees, but then once you're off the disk on the limb, it's cold sky, so you can see a few thousand degree plasma very well. And you see very beautiful prominence eruptions. And then we also saw a number of those prominence eruptions, and then could see probably frontal structure in the soft X-rays when there's nothing else on the disk. We can also see sometimes dimming in microwave for the same reason. You have a coronal structure sitting there, and then the structure disappears, you see dimming in microwaves. And Hanaoka showed that you can even see the arcade in microwaves because higher density, it can emit optically thin emission. Here's a comparison between H-alpha prominence and then a radio prominence. The radio seems to be observing the entire structure, whereas in H-alpha, you see only that section of it. Again, it may be difference between this is a continuum, it can free emission, this is a line, so that may be the difference. And here is the same filament erupting in microwaves. So, and here's another nice filament eruption from Nobuyama, and this is a corresponding event in EUV. So there's a nice ground-based instrument available for studying the core of CMEs. Come to meter waves. This is made from Clark Lake in 1980s. University of Maryland owned a telescope in California. I used to go there to make these images, the contour plots. Of course, those days there was no IDL, so we had to do everything manually, cut and paste. But anyway, you can see if your eyes are sensitive to radio, this is what you will see, and this is the optical sun. So here is an artificial eclipse. We just cover the central disk by ink, and then you can see the whole corona. Okay, so these structures are basically streamers, and then these are all streamer structures. So this corona is about 1,000,000 degrees, and if you calculate the optical depth, it can become optically thick depending upon the size of the material you inject into that. So you accordingly see the deformation, because when tau becomes 1, the observed brightness temperature is same as the kinetic temperature. So you can really see CMEs in this, and here is an example. So this is the before CME, that's the sun in meter waves, and when the CME comes out, you can see the CME right there. And if you make a difference, you see a nice CME. And you can also see in three different frequencies. Okay, again, this is pre-IDL color scheme. And recently, Nansei has seen similar events. This is the April 2098 event. And this structure is probably a substructure of the CME. They have shown that this is the famous tornado event, if you remember. This structure corresponds to, when you extrapolate back to the sun, nicely corresponds to the huge CME which came from something like that. So meter waves can really see CMEs. That's in thermal emission. Because the corona is a million degrees, you put extra density, so the emission measure goes up because it depends on NE square. You see the thermal emission. But then usually what happens in meter waves, the non-thermal emission is so intense, it can be as high as 10 to the 15 degrees. So there's no trillion degrees in the corona, but it all happens because of non-thermal particles. Non-thermal particles can be generated from flares, as we discussed this morning, and also by the CME-driven shock. And the controversy is whether this type 2 burst comes from the CME shock or from the flare. That's still not settled. So for example, in this case, the CME is already at 0027 so far ahead, and it's 0046, you see the type 2 here. So if the shock is there, I don't know how it's going. Maybe it's draped this way. I don't know. And then, like Hugh talked about this morning, if you have non-thermal particles trapped in substructures of CMEs, you can trace the loops like this, and then you can really see the CME moving out. In this case, the white light CME was and the loops were moving at the same speed. So we think non-thermal particles were trapped in the CME structures, and they emit in radio, so we can track the CMEs. And then I want to talk about a new instrument available that has been operating since 94, the wind waves experiment. It can observe in this frequency range, which was never done before. This frequency range corresponds to 2 to 10 solar radii in the corona. So for example, in this case, there is a CME coming out. We can see it in EIT, around 928. In the radio dynamic spectrum, frequency versus time, nothing happens around 930. Right here. But then when the CME reaches particular height, it produces a type 2, which continues into the waves dynamic spectrum. This is the harmonic, this is the fundamental. And also, it produces type 3 like bursts at very 10 megahertz, which is quite far away from the sun. It's about 2 to 3 solar radii. And what we think, when the CME comes out and accelerates particles, it dumps particles along these streamers, and that's what produces these type 3 like bursts. And then the shock itself produces these type 2 bursts. So here's another example. These are the type 3 bursts, and these are type 2 bursts from 10 megahertz all the way to 100 kilohertz, very close to the Earth. And this is the kind of the track of the shock. And then you can see the starting time corresponds to when the CME was probably here, and next time, when the emission is taking place, the CME was right there, and so on. So even after the CME has gone beyond the field of view, it continues to drive shock and produce particles. And so this has actually been very useful to identify faster and wider CMEs, because all these type 2 bursts are produced by faster and wider CMEs. It's a very nice way of separating the shock-driving CMEs this way. Here is some statistics about this radio burst producing CMEs. So they are generally much faster. Average speed is more than 1,000 kilometers per second. They are typically much wider. You see, in the population of 132, 88 were halo events. That doesn't mean they are coming from the disk center. Even from the limb, they are very wide. So they look like halo CMEs. So this brings this tells us about something interesting about these shock-driving CMEs. They expand considerably near the solar surface. And EIT waves also show that. So maybe you don't see ice cream cones. You see a variable ice cream cone, basically. And then also another interesting thing is that most of these fast events decelerate. You can see there's a slight asymmetry, as I pointed out at the beginning. Another reason why we think the radio bursts are interesting, because if you take the time difference between radio burst onset and CME onset, almost zero. Okay. Some on this side, mainly because CMEs sometimes accelerate and then they produce radio bursts at very low frequencies far out into the interplanetary medium. Other than that, they identify fast and wide CMEs very nicely. Okay. All right, I want to show you a couple more things. One interesting thing is the interplanetary scintillations, which we can do from ground-based observatories. Again, it's in radio, maybe 100 megahertz or so. This is based on the interplanetary scintillation technique. When you have a radio source and it passes through the corona, the radio source scintillates. And if you can monitor that, you can essentially study the density irregularities in the corona. So when a CME passes by, it changes that pattern, mainly because of the turbulence in behind the shock. And we can track that up to 1 AU and beyond. Okay, this is a, for example, this every 50 solar radii, you can track some of the radio sources. If you have, of course, a lot of radio sources all around the sky, you can produce a nice even image of the CME. Of course, you all know about in situ observations, so I'm going to skip. But I'll just show you a nice, beautiful CME observed at 1 AU. So, because you have only one point through this three-dimensional structure, so all you see is this plot, high-time plot. You see the shock, of course. You see the shock sheet, and then you see the magnetic cloud. And then the field structure in the magnetic cloud rotates, so you get this little flux rope structure, and so on. So this is the way we detect CMEs at 1 AU. And not all CMEs are flux ropes, so if you do not have smooth rotation, we call it ejecta, but they do have high magnetic field and low temperature. I mentioned in the beginning that the CMEs cause geomagnetic storms. This is an interesting event, very huge geomagnetic storm, more than 300 nanotesla, and it was produced by a very narrow CME identified in ion ratio. Essentially, ion charge states more than 16 is enhanced in CMEs, and you identify the CME duration like this. But actually, this happens to be the sheath behind a shock, and that contains southward BZ. And that's why you had the huge storm. This was actually a limb event. Okay, the shock was extended, and you the spacecraft went through the flank of the shock, and it produced this nice geomagnetic storm. All right. So this is, of course, you can produce images like this. This was created by Burlaga by combining observation from three spacecraft, Helios 1, Voyager 2, and then Helios 2, to get this nice flux rope structure. And a lot of theorists work on this. I don't know. Everybody believes in this. Okay. Here is a working hypothesis for connection between what you see near the sun and at 1 AU. Okay. So I showed you shock near the sun. And shock, of course, we observe in situ. The frontal structure, I think they are, frontal structure is basically the sheath behind the shock. And then cavity is the magnetic cloud or ejecta, which I just showed. And the prominence core, very seldom seen, but sometimes you see it as a pressure pulse like the January event you see at the rear of the magnetic cloud. And of course, arcade formation is stuck to the sun. So I'll stop there.
Very early on, you gave the magnetic field in different parts of the CME, and you gave a strength of the magnetic field in the frontal part. What was that based on?
Oh, it's just the metric coronal loops based on radio burst observations. It gets one Gauss.
I have a question about the identifications you have there between near the sun, the cavity, on the one hand, and near the Earth, the magnetic cloud.
Right.
What is the observational basis for that?
The magnetic cloud is a flux rope structure. So near the sun, there are some observations by Jimmy Chen, not exactly on the disk, but on the side where you see circular void-like structure. So beyond that, this is, as I said, it's just a working hypothesis.
Okay, so it's the fact that you see a structure that looks circular in projection,
yes.
The cavity of the circular projection, and the magnetic cloud is,
right.
Is a fluxural.
Right.
It's reasonable. It's a dark cavity, bigger magnetic field.
Yeah.
That's what you see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believable.
I agree with you. I just wanted to hear what Gopal's answer was.
I was curious about the EIT waves. At least the ones we look at in carbon particles that seem to be coming from the clear. And if you say that they're actually the signature of the CME that's actually being seen, what does that actually correspond to? Some kind of
I think it is just a disturbance. It's probably part of the shock. If suppose you have a CME which is not moving superalphenic, then it'll produce some waves. Okay, whatever waves, it, like fast mode waves, they propagate away. But someplace this CME will become superalphenic, and then there you get a shock and get a type 2 and things like that. In some cases, you get very early on the shock. So I think the EIT waves are basically fast mode waves, and you see the compression, which enhances the emission in 195.
I know people. There's a different opinion about this. From my point of view, many of the EIT waves are just the CME itself, and not the shock disturbance. The reason I say that is because we know about Morton waves, which probably form fairly close to where the UV signature would be, and they move much faster. They move so fast, in fact, the EIT would normally just get one exposure on a given event. And so therefore, to see it traveling automatically means that it's really not a Morton wave type of blast wave.
See, Morton wave, basically you have a coronal shock produced there, and then when it goes down in the chromosphere, again, the alphane speed is low, then it shocks the chromosphere. That's why you get the Morton wave. So they are not quite the same. But I think if they're not also the same CME, because you see it's so symmetric around this active region, some of those waves. So if CME, I don't know how to interpret that in terms of as a CME.